You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Recorded in Chicago, Illinois, with your hosts, Ken, Matt, Neil, and Jeff, this is Triviality.
Hello and welcome to Triviality, the game where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge. My name is Neil. I'm here with Jeff and Ken. How are you both?
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. You guys are both drinking some coffee. How's it tasting today?
It's delicious as always, Neil.
Oh, you're welcome.
You should go into the biz.
I might go into the biz one day, maybe.
Start roasting. I'll roast with you.
Yeah. I'd like to have a small coffee shop with themed drinks and cool posters and stuff. There's a great coffee shop here in Chicago if you ever visit or if you live here called The Wormhole. They have a full-size DeLorean from Back to the Future, and there's a bunch of video games and 80s movie posters and stuff, so it's kind of a cool eclectic design in there, but something like that would be fun.
Speaking of such things, Neil, I went to a chocolatier in the city the other day, and they had a Biscoff chocolate vegan drinking chocolate.
Oh, wow. Did you taste it?
I was thinking of you, and as I suckled at it.
Oh, you did suckle?
Yeah, I suckled.
How was it?
It was delicious.
Was it? That sounds really good. Where's that at?
Armitage and Humboldt Street, about.
Okay. Yeah, Ken is a huge fan of drinking chocolate, if you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to try that, though. That sounds really good. Anytime you throw a Biscoff into something. Jeff, are you a suckler of drinking chocolate?
No, not
You don't
quite.
Suckle?
No, I've been enjoying, seasonal beverages, but not the chocolate variety.
It was the sweetest thing I ever drank, I'm pretty sure. So you would love it.
Okay.
It was too sweet for me. But
too sweet?
Delicious.
It makes me think we're in a Seinfeld episode. Did you suckle?
Yeah.
He suckled.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. I see this coffee shop you run as an opportunity for you to help budding screenwriters. Everybody who shows up at your coffee shop and you give notes on has these screenplays that just hit it big.
Mm. That'd be and just take a little percentage.
Make a little TV show yourself.
I'm seeing it
like an anthology.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because there always is screenwriters in the cafe who just get one coffee and sit there all day and just go to the bathroom 10 times and stuff.
They should have their bladders looked at. But anyways.
Yes. So speaking of coffee shops, Matt is not here today. He's actually at the coffee conglomerate. No reason to make up something funny because he's working, which is kind of funny. So he's at the coffee conglomerate.
I guess it's not funny. He wasn't supposed to be working.
He wasn't supposed to be working. So
he intended to be here, but it didn't work out.
He did. So best wishes to Matt. But we have some
salutations.
Salutations. May God have mercy on your soul. So we have some special guests here today. And as we've been saying, our last 10 episodes on our road to 300, we've been wanting to celebrate all the patrons that have helped us get to where we are now. And we're going to start that today by introducing one of our longest tenured patrons, actually our fifth patron of all time.
No way, that's crazy.
Yeah, fifth patron, started October 10th, 2017, an Oakland 5 supporter from Louisville, Kentucky. You know her, you love her, Asha Youssef. How are you, Asha?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
Welcome back.
Yes, welcome back.
Can you please remind the lovely people at home or in their cars all about you?
Well, my name is Asha. I'm from Louisville. I'm a fourth grade teacher, and I don't know. I don't have anything exciting to say today.
Trivia fanatic.
Trivia fanatic.
And a patron classic.
And yes. Apparently, I was one of the top 10 patrons. So
yeah. That's true. Yeah,
top
you were
five even.
You were the top. Yeah, the fifth patron of all of our whole existence. So thank
Who
you so
knew?
Much for helping us get to where we are today. We really appreciate it.
And I hope it's a good sign that you're still with us.
Yes.
That we haven't driven you away. So.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, yeah, thank you so much. And then to sort of juxtapose Asha being here, we wanted to highlight one of our newest patrons and thank them for joining the fray. They're actually a friend of the show, Dave Brown, the high school friends, which is awesome. So thank you, Dave, for introducing our special guest host today. But they're coming to us from Robbinsdale, Minnesota. They're an Oakland 5 supporter. Just joined October 2022. Bill Begeman. How are you, Bill?
Good. Thanks for having me on. Super excited to be here. And yeah, Asha, you joined on my birthday. We were talking birthdays before the show. October 10th, 2017. That would have been number 31 for me. So.
Oh, I thought it was the day he was born.
And happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Yeah, happy belated birthday.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, we should say we're recording this late
much
October.
Closer to the
yeah,
time
this is basically a day from Halloween. And Asha, when this comes out, your birthday will be December 30th. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, December 30th.
It's really like kind of a birthday episode.
So we're creeping up on New Year's though, right?
We are creeping up on New Year's, which is my birthday. So it's a big, big birthday episode today, apparently.
All right. Well, we're excited to get going. Bill, can you tell us a little bit about yourself first?
Yeah, like you guys said, I live up in Robbinsdale, Minnesota, basically Minneapolis. I, like Asha, am a teacher. I'm a high school social studies teacher up here in the Twin Cities Metro. And I also do professional wrestling. So
yes.
I don't make quite as much money doing that as I do the main gig. But I put a lot of hours into that. So I definitely, and I do get paid some money
awesome.
To do it. So I do consider myself a professional.
Yeah. If you get paid to do something, you're a professional, which yeah, technically makes us
professional podcasters.
Hey, that's so cool. we'll have to come see you at some point, maybe, and see a match or two or something.
Yeah. I'm trying to get down there in the Chicago area. So maybe this will help me out.
That would be great.
I would go to that. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, as I said, New Year's is creeping up on us at time of airing. So just like we anticipate that moment mm-hmm. where the new year rolls over, we're going to be the Charles Bronson classic film 10 to Midnight.
Sounds good to me. Yep.
How about you guys?
Inspired by the upcoming new year, we chose to drop the ball. So
okay.
So you'll be drop the ball or dropping the ball?
Dropping the ball.
Let's
hope that your team does and me and Neil can clutch a victory in our sweaty, sweaty palms.
Just like the firearm used by Chuck Bronson to eliminate the villain in 10 to Midnight. Spoiler yeah. alert.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
That's not a very good movie.
No.
Fine. Anyways, we have a special rules read as well.
Yeah. So we have a special rules read from our friend Mayhem, one of our patrons, and she put together a rules read in Tagalog, which is really cool. So something new. We have the Dutch reading, and we're inviting anyone who might want to do a rules read in their own native language. That's really, really cool. We want to spread the love as much as we can. So thank you to Mayhem for this rule read, and it is in Tagalog. Enjoy.
Yung patakaran ng laro ay simple. May dalawang round na may digsampung tanong. Sa gitna, mayroong special swing round na isinulat ng host. Sa huling round, ang mga koponan ay tumataya ng 0 hanggang 30 puntos sa bawat isa sa mga huling tanong. Sa dulo, malalaman natin sino ang cream of the crop.
Nobody does it better.
So I think we know the rules.
I think we know the rules.
We know the rules. But if you guys don't know the rules at home, and that was a little challenging, mm-hmm. maybe check it out in a different episode.
Yeah, but it's just going to be questions, and we're going to answer them.
Yeah,
you'll figure it out. Yeah.
I think the only thing that matters is at the end of this game, someone will be the cream of the crop.
Yeah, that part we heard.
That part we did hear. But our cream of the crop today is going to be Bill, and you're in the center of the ring, so take it away. We're ready to play.
Let's suplex that mofo.
Oh, these, and I will have some wrestling related stuff coming up in a later round. I took the approach of write what you know. So my game here is as self absorbed as it can possibly be.
Awesome.
And yeah, round one is going to be social studies. Like I mentioned, I'm a social studies teacher up here at actually Forest Lake High School in the Twin Cities Metro. And so all round one questions will be connected to a course that is taught at my high school in the social studies department. All right. Question one will be under the category citizenship and government. Shout out to Mr. Maloney, who does just a fantastic job teaching that at my high school. And the question is this. Most U.S. citizens obtain their citizenship at birth by either being born inside the United States or being born to parents that are citizens. But for non-citizens who want to obtain citizenship, there is a way to acquire it. What is the earthy name of that multi-step process.
Okay, Asha, what comes to mind?
Naturalization.
That was what I was thinking.
Is the only thing I can think of. I don't know what that, if that's really earthy, but I guess natural.
Natural?
Maybe, yeah.
That's the direction I was headed. I think we should lock that in.
Let's lock it in.
Well, we said the same thing, naturalization.
Or as we call it here earthy. In the studio, O-naturalization as we record.
Earthy as the flavor of this coffee.
Hmm.
Points to both teams. The answer is indeed naturalization.
Nice. Thank you, Mr. Maloney.
Term. Yeah, Mr. Maloney. Great dude. All right, question two. Question two is in the category of human geography. Shout out to Mr. Osborne. And the question is, human geographers have many tools that they use to study the demographics of certain places. One of these tools organizes people into a graphical illustration based on age and sex, and usually takes a particular shape, although some countries like Japan are increasingly producing inverted ones. What is the alliterative name of this demographic tool?
So, Neil, I kind of know what he's getting at here, but I don't know how to articulate this into an answer, especially an alliterative answer.
I honestly have no idea, but when I think of things that are inverted, I think of triangles. So the only thing I can come up with is a people pyramid. So hopefully you have something better than that.
I know what he's talking about. You want to go like population pyramid or something?
Yeah, that works for me.
Okay, we're going to go population pyramid.
Yeah, that's as good an answer as any. We don't really have one, but I think what he's talking about is the how Japan is an aging country as opposed to like a country that's has more young population. But I don't know how to articulate that, so no answer. Johnson.
Points to one team. The answer is population pyramid.
Nice.
Wow. And Ken, you're right on. Because Japan has an aging population, the wider part of their population pyramid is actually at the top. So it forms kind of like an inverted pyramid. Most developing countries have the more traditional triangle shape, which is what gives it its name. Question three, category is world history. Shout out to Mr. Elliott, who is also our union rep. And the question is, watchers of John Green's Crash Course World History will know that this nomadic civilization, which during the 13th and 14th centuries established the largest contiguous land empire in world history, is the so-called exception to every one of history's rules. What is this civilization?
Asha, we can lock in if you trust me on this.
I trust you.
This is the in Jeff's wheelhouse.
Yeah, he loves Crash Course.
I love Crash Course.
So much so that, like the David Cronenberg film, he crashes cars while watching Crash Course.
And kind of gets off
to it.
I don't know, what would the civilization
be? There's no kink shaming around here.
No, not
at
all.
The Macedonians, I don't think they're nomadic, but I don't have a great...
What about the... I'm thinking of a name of...
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Want to say the Macedonians?
Sure.
All right, Asha, so we're going to go with the only civilization or group that successfully invaded what is currently mainland Russia in winter, and we're going to go with the Mongols.
Points to one team. The answer is, wait for it, the Mongols. And anyone who watched Crash Course World History, John Green, you know all about the Mongols, but... maybe even if you don't watch Crash Course, you know that in the 13th, 14th centuries, the Mongols established a pretty enormous empire. Wasn't all that long lasting. A lot of it was relatively uninhabited, but pretty impressive nevertheless.
Sorry, Mr. Elliott. We'll make up that work after class.
Mr. Elliott is not going to be happy with you guys.
It's pretty hard to forget if you've seen the Crash Course because they play like a cheesy movie clip and it's just like, da-da, like, yeah, one of those shoddy 70s things.
Question four. The category is U.S. history. Shout out to Mrs. Wright. What historical figure said the following quote? I long to hear that you have declared an independency. And by the way, in the new code of laws, which I suppose it will be necessary for you to make, I desire you would remember the ladies and be more generous and favorable to them than your ancestors. Remember, all men would be tyrants if they could. If particular care and attention is not paid to the ladies, We are determined to foment a rebellion and will not hold ourselves bound by any laws in which we have no voice or no representation.
So the question, Neil, for this one is this an outside party talking about the U.S. independence, or is this a U.S. figure talking about somebody else's independence? And I would go with the former. So I have a guess. How about this person? Elle Fanning?
Elle Fanning, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, we're electing.
Yeah. I also was kind of wondering if it was like somebody who was around during the time of the revolution in China, right, to somebody else. So if it was like Martha Washington or Angelica Schuyler or I don't know, somebody of that time.
Yeah, I had either a Martha Washington or maybe an Abigail Adams. I believe she was also a pretty cool badass.
That might be a good answer.
But seeing as how you said what historical figure said the following quote, it's about U.S. history, but it doesn't have to be a U.S. person. So I was thinking of other famous women who were maybe in power at the time. Looking at France, who was an ally, Marie Antoinette, that would have been when she was still around. My gut kind of went to Marie Antoinette. I know it's a little outside the box, but.
Yeah, well, let's try it. I don't have a better answer.
We're going to go with Marie Antoinette.
If Elle Fanning has taught me anything, and she's taught me much, mm-hmm. it's that Catherine the Great was fairly progressive.
Ah.
And so we're saying Catherine the Great.
That's a good guess.
As much as I'd like to say huzzah to a few of your answers, no points awarded. The right answer was said aloud. It is Abigail Adams.
Mm.
This
Ooh,
is
wow.
Abigail Adams writing to her husband, John Adams, Asha got the clue that this is about the American Revolution and independency. But yeah, Abigail Adams in a letter to her husband, John, urging him to remember the ladies. And of course, he did not.
Remember the ladies.
I remember her being cool. Well, we should have guessed that. I feel bad.
John Giamatti Adams. Yeah. Sorry, Mrs. Wright. Another teacher we're disappointing today.
We'll be there after school.
Unfortunately, we were a bunch of Mr. and Mrs. Wrongs on that one.
Well, perhaps you can make Mr. Wiggin a little bit happier. Question number 5 is in the category of economics.
Doubt it.
Oh, okay.
Not to be confused with mushrooms. This economic term refers to the property of a good or a commodity whose individual units are essentially interchangeable, and each of whose parts is indistinguishable from any other part. What is this economic term?
Okay, I think I have an idea, but I'm not 100%. I think it's like fungible or something along those lines. I don't know if I'm exactly saying it correctly.
Fungible token?
Fungible token. Yeah. I don't know if that's
right. Well, we've been hearing a lot about NFTs lately.
Yeah, that's fine.
Fungible.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of what I wrote down.
And it makes sense with the mushroom clue. So we'll also go with fungible.
Points to both teams. The answer is fungible or fungibility. I did not know this. This is just something I came across in my research for writing this game. But yeah, with all the news about NFTs, I thought maybe this one would be more gettable than maybe it was in the past. So yeah, fungible or fungibility is the correct answer.
No awesome. Detention with Mr. Wiggin.
Yeah, Mr. Wiggin, he's happy. And we're happy, too. After 5 questions, looks like Team 10 to Midnight only picking up 20 points and dropping the ball, still holding the ball with 40 points, doubling our score. So still pretty close game, as I like to say.
Okay, round 6. The category is psychology. Shout out to Mr. Roberts. Twiggy is the name of a famous squirrel that is often used by psych teachers to teach about operant conditioning, a type of associative learning process through which the strength of a behavior is modified by reinforcement or punishment. What skill was Twiggy operationally conditioned to perform? And don't worry, he was wearing a PFD.
Yeah, we have an idea here of what PFD stands for, which is really kind of leading us into an answer. So whether or not it's correct is all based on if PFD is what we think it is. So we're going to lock in.
I was just going to say something like, press a button that gave food, or press a button that gave another squirrel a shock or something. I don't know.
Oh, that would have been messed up. It's combining the Milgram experiment with
like rodents.
Rang a bell. Rodents were kinder.
Don't worry, he's fine. But he's not screaming anymore. He's fine. Yeah, we can say hit a button. I don't for food. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that I ain't got nothing.
So PFD right away. I kind of locked in. I believe it's personal flotation device. And initially we were thinking swimming, but we do know that there was always like a meme going around of a squirrel water skiing. And so we said maybe it was, if we need to be more specific, we're going to say water skiing.
Points to one team. Twiggy was a water skiing squirrel. Yeah.
Are you kidding me? That meme?
I remember this from when I was a kid. They used to have those Sports Illustrated for kids, and they had the little cardboard cards inserts in there that you could kind of tear out. There was a Twiggy on one of those, and apparently they're still teaching about them in the psych class down the hall from me. So, and Twiggy, so there's more than one Twiggy, so there's a lot of Twiggies. But yeah, that's water skiing squirrel is the answer. Question 7 is in the category of anthropology. Shout out to Mrs. Booman. Lucy, a fossilized Australopithecus afarensis unearthed in Ethiopia in 1974, is one of the most famous and important human ancestors ever discovered, providing further evidence to the belief that bipedalism preceded brain size in human evolution. What was the inspiration for Lucy's name?
I think we're locked in.
Ken quickly locked in Scarlett Johansson movie, so I think we're pretty solid over here.
Scarlett Johansson's best movie.
I saw that in the theaters. I was so disappointed when I left. But yes, her? We're locked in. No, Lucy.
I was just kidding.
Doing a her joke. Anyways. Yeah.
I would say her.
I like Jojo Rabbit. Her performance in that. Yeah,
so
but
there's a lot of good ones.
She has a lot of good ones. We're locked in over here.
Okay, so literally the only Lucy I can think of right now is the one from
Peanuts.
Peanuts.
Yep, there we go. Okay, we're on the same wavelength. I mean, maybe I guess we'll just say Peanuts.
Yeah, let's go with it.
All right. I think I remember. It could be Peanuts. I thought I remembered it being something about Lucy and this guy with diamonds, so that's what we said.
Points to one team. If you can picture yourself in a boat on a river, you might know that Lucy was named after the Beatles' hit song, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, which is apparently blaring at the camp nonstop as they were doing their archaeological dig. So
I was like, how did that come about? It, but that makes sense.
So just inspired by whoever had the aux cord
on their iPod in 1974.
Oh, is it? Oh, in 1974. Yeah, so someone brought a vinyl.
Yeah.
Wow, so they really were committed. They had to bring a vinyl to the campsite. So,
they had the Beatles there playing it on a loop.
That was the only way they got back.
It was merely Eleanor Rigby.
They thought the roof was their last concert, but they're like, no, we're going to go play an archaeological dig.
Hey, I want to find some bones here, right? Yeah.
All right. Question 8. Category is international relations. Shout out to Mr. Cole. The number of countries with nuclear weapons can depend on how you count. But if you believe Wikipedia, and you always should, the number of sovereign states that have publicly announced their detonation of nuclear weapons combined with the number of other sovereign states that are presumed to have nuclear weapons leave the world with how many current nuclear armed countries? And I will take answers within one.
So yeah, just talking about them, totaling them up here, we think we have about 8, and 7 to 9 feels like an appropriate range, so that's what we're going to go with.
Neil's guess was around that range. I thought it was a little bit higher, purely also on a guess, but we said about 17. I just felt like there were more countries in Europe, but maybe I'm over-guessing it.
Points go to one team. The answer is 9, and Jeff, you did a pretty good job listing them off there. There's the 5 from the UN Security Council. That's the U.S., Russia, China, France, Great
China.
Britain. Yeah, and then the ones that kind of, I guess, illegally possess them and everybody knows it is India, Pakistan, and North Korea. And the one that is presumed to have nuclear weapons is Israel, which you
Oh, that's
mentioned.
Right. That's right.
Sorry, Neil. You were right in the ballpark, and I talked you out of it.
That's all right. It doesn't happen often, so I wasn't confident.
I think I knew that just because I had heard that number the other day in a video I watched.
If I was a student of Mr. Cole, I'd be a lot more confident, but alas, I'm not.
All right. Question 9. Category is AP. Shout out to Miss Wilkie. AP, or Advanced Placement Classes, offer college-level curriculum to high school students and an opportunity to earn college credit pending their score on the AP exam. The minimum score needed to receive college credit can vary from college to college, but nearly all colleges would award credit to students obtaining the highest score. What is the highest possible score on an AP exam? Hint, it's a single-digit number.
Reluctant.
I think it's 5.
I'm almost positive it's 5. I took about 10 or 11 AP courses.
Okay, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Ooh, I didn't get a 5 on any of them. I was
very few people get 5s.
I was too dumb. I didn't even pass some of them.
I never took one AP course. I was in band and choir.
So last year I proctored a bunch of AP tests.
So you're close to it. You're nearby.
I think it was 5.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure 3 is a pass and 5 is the highest you can get. So we're going to lock in 5.
We agree.
Points all around. The answer is 5. And yeah, I don't know what I was doing in high school, but I'm not even sure if I knew that AP classes existed. But very much a thing that is great for our students at Forest Lake High School now. A lot of kids, thanks to our great AP teachers, earning college credit for free.
I just remember.
That's what I tell the AP students. I'm like, hey, I graduated a semester early, much thanks to my AP credit, and I saved like $16,000. So think about it, kids.
Oh, interesting. I don't even think AP courses existed until I was like a junior or senior, and then at least at our school. And then I just remember kids like being very anxious and crying out of classes with their AP stuff because it was very hard, is what I heard. So,
question 10, category is Spanish immersion. Shout out to Miss Quam. Also, a bonus citizenship and government question. As is often the case when translating between English and Spanish, the term frenos y contrapesos is not an exact translation, but it still conveys essentially the same meaning in regard to a certain moderating feature of U.S. government. What is the English version of the term frenos y contrapesos?
Okay, Ken seems pretty confident, and he's only speaking to me in Spanish while we're deliberating, but he locked in.
What do you think about checks and balances?
I absolutely like that as an answer.
All right, checks and balances, and we also say checks and balances because it's one thing and then the other thing. I don't know Spanish. You know I don't know Spanish.
I figured contrapesos was against money, right? So that's your balance.
Points to both teams. The answer is checks and balances. Frenos or frenar actually means to break, and contrapesos is counterweight. So breaks and counterweights, but yeah, same idea. Checks and balances, a moderating feature of U.S. government.
All right, after the first 10 questions, that puts us at 60, but just ahead of us is dropping the ball, not dropping the ball, at 70.
And speaking of some high scores, we're getting really, really higher with our Patreon involvement. We're almost at 500. We're about 13 away from 500 as of recording. So we're super excited about that. And as we said, Bill and Asha both are Patreon supporters, which we appreciate. So if you'd like to join them, you can go to patreon.com/trivialitypodcast. And what we want to say about that is if you do go to patreon.com/trivialitypodcast and sign up for as little as $1 a month, you can get our main feed episodes, what you're listening to right now, ad-free if you don't want to hear the ads. We have a lot of new ads coming. We're going to be trying some new products in the new year. We're excited to sample all those products and handpick some of the things that we're going to be talking about. But some of the ads are auto-inserted. So if you don't want to hear that stuff or you don't want to click the skip button, you can go to your Patreon account and get it ad-free. Jeff usually puts it up a day before, too, so you also get it early. So
yeah, thank you so much. We've seen such great growth since we announced that we were trying to take some of our efforts full-time. It seems that everybody's supporting us so far, and we could not be more grateful. So thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much. Join Bill and Asha over at Patreon. But right now, we're just excited to hear the swing rounds. What do we have in store, Bill?
Yeah, so like I said, I'm doing a very much Write What You Know game, and I am currently in the process of trying to watch every single episode of The Simpsons in chronological order. Yeah, Neil doesn't look happy. I'm on season 2, so I got a ways to go. But here's my question, which when I play tested it, even people who aren't big Simpsons fans seem to do okay on. So swing round category is supporting Simpsons. And here's the question. According to some data compiled on the first 26 seasons of The Simpsons, The majority of the dialogue is unsurprisingly spoken by the members of the Simpson nuclear family minus Maggie. That's Homer, Marge, Bart, and Lisa in that order. In any order, name the next 10 Simpsons characters that appear on that list of most words spoken according to scripts from SimpsonsWorld.com.
All right, we have a list to generate and we'll be right back.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we are back with our lists of Simpsons characters. So I guess we'll just go down our lists one team at a time, and then we can have the real list and check off who is correct. So we'll start. We said Flanders, Moe, Principal Skinner, Apu, Smithers, Milhouse, Krusty, Lenny, Carl, and Mr. Burns.
Okay, it's going to be pretty similar. We said Moe, Mr. Burns, Edna Krabappel, Krusty, Sideshow Bob, Armin Tamzarian, also known as Principal Skinner, Apu, Smithers, Milhouse, and Flanders.
All right, I tried to keep track there, but I will just read the official list here and let you figure out how many you got right. The next 10 most words spoken for the Simpsons supporting cast is as follows, and in this order: Mr. Burns, Moe, Seymour Skinner, Ned Flanders, Krusty the Clown, Grandpa Simpson, Chief Wiggum, Kent Brockman, Milhouse, and Apu.
Oh, a couple surprises on there for sure.
Yeah. Kent Brockman was pretty much universally missed by my playtesting of this question.
Darn.
And I guess he is in almost every episode, like just a little bit, you know what I mean?
Abe is our 11th choice. So that's
and I assumed that Krabappel did not make the list because of the actress's passing. So the last couple seasons,
well, that's true,
probably tilted it out of kilter a little bit.
One of the things interesting about the list is how male-centric it is. They pointed out Mrs. Krabappel is not until, it looks like, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. And yeah, it's mostly in the top 50. It's got to be like 40-some male roles. So
wow.
All right, not too much swinging in that swing round as we both got 7 correct, bringing us at 10 of midnight to 95 and 105 for dropping the ball.
And as I said, round 2 will be a professional wrestling themed round. But don't worry for you non-professional wrestling people. I very much, for the most part, tried to write trivia questions that non-wrestling fans could answer. So just listen for those clues that might direct you towards the right answer, even if you've never watched an episode of WWE Raw in your life. So, question 1. Category is Going Hollywood. Terry Bollea was just a fretless bass player for a 1970s Florida-based rock band called Ruckus when he was discovered by the Briscoe brothers, who, impressed by his physical stature, convinced him to get trained as a professional wrestler. What name is Terry Bollea better known by today?
I mean, this man is mostly known for his wide variety of pasta, correct?
And his t-shirts and other things at his store.
I thought it was all about his reality TV show.
And yeah, we're going with Hulk Hogan.
Brother.
Brother.
Yeah. Asha, I'm pretty sure this is Hulk Hogan.
Okay, let's lock it in.
Whether or not you needed the theme of going Hollywood, the answer is indeed Hollywood Hulk Hogan. Question two. Category is just too sweet. One of the most infamous wrestling factions of the 1990s shares its name with a suspected real-world group whose Wikipedia page defines them as, quote, a secretive power elite with a globalist agenda conspiring to rule the world through an authoritarian one-world government. What is the name of this wrestling faction?
We're locked in.
Asha, is this the Illuminati, maybe?
That works for me. I don't have any idea of going from the wrestling aspect of it. So.
Oh, neither do I. I'm just guessing the, like, a secretive elite globalist agenda.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that Stonemason Steve Austin?
There's your episode title.
That's yeah, really that, good.
Let's try it. I have no idea.
Okay. We're going to guess the Illuminati.
Give me a hell yeah. Hell yeah. It's the whole cult. Yeah, this one.
I don't think let's not get the stonemasons after us, Neil.
Yeah, that's true. We don't want the stonemasons
you mean the
after
Freemasons?
Us. Or the Freemasons? Whoever yeah, whoever meets in dark corners and hoods and talks about architecture, whatever they do. I don't know. But yeah, Bill and I did the too sweet symbol, which if you've ever seen it before, it's your middle and ring finger on your thumb, and it kind of looks like a wolf, and then they kiss the mouse there. But we said it was NWO.
One team will be receiving points. The answer is indeed the NWO, is just too sweet.
Sting was in it for a while, right?
Wolfpack.
He was in it for quite a
Wolfpack,
while.
Wolfpack, yeah.
Sting was in it for quite a while.
He was in it for longer than you'd expect him to be. Honestly, he's still doing it too. I mean, you thought he was injured from the Seth Rollins, you know, powerbomb into the corner, but he's still doing it.
I'm so glad the Sting is back.
And then Jeff over here, Big Daddy Diesel, shaking his head.
Question three. Category is beyond the WWE universe. Dwayne The Rock Johnson is the highest grossing former wrestler in Hollywood, and it's not close. However, despite his impressive box office performances, The Rock does not rank first among former wrestlers when it comes to the highest grossing film that he has appeared in. That distinction belongs to a wrestler who, despite mostly supporting roles, has made his fair share of money in Hollywood as well. Who is this former wrestler turned actor?
Okay, we're locked in. We're pretty confident we have the right guy.
I wonder if it's the guy from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Dave Bautista?
Yeah, him.
Ooh.
Yeah, because that cab movie with Kumail Nanjiani made a ton of money.
That's not a bad idea. He plays mostly supporting characters. The only other one I could think of was John Cena.
Yeah, those were the only two on my list. But I figured
I haven't seen John Cena in anything, though.
No.
Oh, I see him. I love John Cena.
He's
really
good.
I haven't seen him in anything.
Oh, well, you haven't. Yeah, no one has.
Asha got it. I kind of I wasn't thinking Dave Bautista, but now I kind of like it. So let's go Dave Bautista.
Okay.
Yeah, we said Bautista because he was in Endgame.
Yeah, right. He was in the Avengers movies. Yeah, right. So definitely.
The category was beyond the WWE universe. So yes, Marvel Universe. The answer was Dave Bautista. Both teams receiving points.
It wasn't the Kumail Nanjiani.
Drax the Destroyer? What?
Yeah, that's it.
Like, yeah.
Drax, I think.
Yeah,
Drax,
yeah.
Right.
And another wrestling connection there, CM Punk, Phil Brooks. He wrote a comic book on it. Yeah.
Question four. Category is the Ugandan Giant. James Harris was born in 1950 in Senatobia, Mississippi, and like many other professional wrestlers, did not wrestle under his own name. Coincidentally, The one-word ring name that Harris did use is identical in spelling to the first name of another famous person with the surname Harris. What was James Harris's ring name?
This is a tough one because I'm trying to think of the era, Ken. Like, if born in 1950, they probably were in prominence in their between 30s and 40s, which would be 80s, early 90s.
All right. Well, we just can't quite figure this one out. Right, Neil?
Yeah, we can't figure it out. I think it's in there somewhere, but we're going to probably lock in with a completely different wrestler that has a single name, kind of, but yeah.
First thoughts, Asha?
I literally can't think of anything. Like, I can't even think of another person named Harris.
We have a pretty famous one who's the VP of the United States right now, and
Oh, that's probably what it is.
That would be kind of interesting if his
Yes, no, that's exactly what it is.
Kamala.
Yes.
So that's what we're going to go with.
I should have gone that way. Kamala had the white face paint and the star and the moon on their body and paint.
Man, yeah, as soon as you said that, I remember hearing that.
That's my bad. I had that figure. We just locked in with Kali, which is completely wrong. It's definitely not the great Kali, but yeah.
Points to one team. Neil, you were thinking of Papa Shango.
Papa Shango, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's who I was for Halloween last year. But the answer is indeed Kamala. Yeah, who happens to have the same last name as Kamala Harris. Really interesting story, too. There's like a little 10-minute YouTube story on Kamala's life and career after wrestling. Very sad, but the story of a lot of wrestlers, particularly wrestlers of color, who just didn't get treated very well by the World Wrestling Federation back in the day. Question 5. Category is spelled like the guy in the Bible. Also, like many other wrestlers, Brian Clark wrestled under various ring names. Under one of these ring names, Clark sported luminous green contact lenses, a bright red tongue, and was purported to hail from 3 Mile Island. What was Brian Clark's punny ring name?
All right, I wrote down a few guesses on my paper and showed Neil, and he's picked one. We have some reasoning, which we'll tell you in a minute. What do you guys think?
We have no idea.
Yeah.
We think we've got something from 3 Mile Island, thinking it had to do with the disaster that occurred there, but we can't think of any biblical names that may be punny in that sense. So we got to do the thing in wrestling and tap out.
Okay. Well, Neil informed me that Cain, it was spelled differently than the Cain in the Bible, so we thought maybe his brother Abel was the other counterpart. I don't know if that's a wrestler.
So this was one of the toughest ones I play tested, but I liked it too much to leave it out. Jeff, you're right. This is a nod to the nuclear disaster that took place at 3 Mile Island. The character's name was Adam Bomb.
Adam Bomb.
Yeah. WWF showing his genius there. Adam Bomb was the name of Brian Clark's ring personality that hailed from 3 Mile Island. So no points to either team.
I kind of like that name, actually.
All right, both teams picking up 30 points in the first half of the second round, bringing it to 125 for us, 135 for them. So still a 10-point game.
Question 6. Category is Ready to Rumble. The downfall of the wrestling promotion WCW is often attributed to a series of head-scratching booking decisions that made wrestling fans want to scream. But none of them is more infamous than the decision to put the promotion's World Heavyweight Championship on what physically unimposing Hollywood actor, a decision which Mean Gene Okerlund equated to throwing the title in the trash.
My first thought here is David Arquette. I know he got into wrestling, but I think this was maybe before he got into wrestling. And he doesn't seem to be a very physically imposing actor. So,
like, I have no frame of reference for time wise, but the first person that came to my mind was Pee Wee Herman.
Oh, that would be hilarious. I just don't.
But I think David Arquette is probably a better.
Safer guess, maybe? Okay. I don't know if it's better, but we're going to go with David Arquette.
Yeah, surprisingly, I had to convince Neil into this answer. I was like, it says scream in the question.
Yep.
And the title of the question is Ready to Rumble. So we said David Arquette.
points to both teams. As much as I would have loved to see Pee Wee Herman as the heavyweight champion, the answer is indeed David Arquette, who's still kind of active on the independent wrestling scene every now and then.
Yeah, an opinion, daddy.
He was in a great doc when he actually really got into wrestling, where he was like getting really hurt with like people smashing him with like fluorescent light bulbs and all that kind of stuff. And he was getting to like extreme wrestling. And I can't remember. Or You Cannot Kill David Arquette. It just came out 2 years ago, where he actually like tried to give a go at real wrestling, like trying real hard. So pretty interesting.
Question 7. Category is thank you very much. Even though he is one of the most decorated professional wrestlers in history, today's wrestling fans probably know Jerry the King Lawler more for his color commentary than for his wrestling. Likewise, even during his wrestling heyday, older generations probably remember Lawler for his real-life feud with what non-wrestling entertainer and performer who was also well-versed in the art of kayfabe?
We're locked in.
Maybe the greatest at kayfabe.
I don't have anything that would be helpful in this.
Neither do I. But I'm just trying to think of a real-life feud with a non-wrestling entertainer. And the only one I can think of that kept making appearances in wrestling was Donald Trump. So I don't have a better answer, but it's an answer.
This is Tony, what's his name? Tony Clifton?
Tony Clifton. Yeah.
Andy Kaufman.
Oh.
Points to one team. If you ever are wondering what the definition of kayfabe is, you can simply listen to an REM hit all about kayfabe, which is Man on the Moon, a song about Andy Kaufman.
Mr.
Thank you very much.
Kaufman in the wrestling match. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I explained it to you before. It's just it's a lost art now. You're staying in character at all times, Jeff. So if you're a heel, you're mean to all the fans that come up to you after the show. You never break character. But they do all the time now because they have social media and all that good stuff. So.
Yeah, and Andy Kaufman and Lawler had some really epic conflicts on, I believe it was the Tonight Show, with some late night show where it was very much blurred the lines between art and reality. So
much like the Joaquin Phoenix,
very much like that. Yeah, because it's very uncomfortable because you actually think Lawler's like angry with him and smacking him around because Andy Kaufman's like playing it off like he's genuine. So it's like really awkward. But
so it was, so the feud was made up or it was real?
It was fake.
Didn't Lawler never really got mad at him?
No, I think it was all, he was in character, right?
Lawler? Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, I believe after Andy Kaufman's death, Lawler revealed that it was all a work.
Yeah, because he said it was like, he was awesome. Like a good friend with him. Yeah. Which is insane, because like people just thought that they hate each other, and he's like, you know, suplexing him and body slamming him. This is crazy.
What's the opposite of it, where I pretend to be nice to you guys every week?
That's triviality, baby.
Question 8. Category is Tag Team Wrestling Part 1. The Natural Disasters were a tag team from the early 1990s made up of two heavyweight wrestlers, each named after a, wait for it, natural disaster. For 5 points each, name the natural disasters that these wrestlers were named after. Hint, the Philippines experienced both of these natural disasters during the 2022 calendar year.
Okay, we talked about it. We listed some natural disasters. I'm trying to remember this duo. They're very, very deep in my memory, but we locked in with two, so we're gonna give it a go.
Okay, Asha. Anything with recent international news bring these to mind?
Like tsunami, earthquake, tidal wave.
I feel like
mudslide.
It's been I don't know, 2022 has been 3 years for me because I don't think anything real has happened since 2019. But in my mind, at least, it's all 1 year. I feel like there was a volcano maybe that happened in the Philippines recently. I remember it kind of grounding like air traffic. So I'm not sure if it was volcano or eruption. Either way, those are great names. And then maybe the other one I was thinking of that we haven't talked about is Typhoon.
Oh, that's a good one.
Because that's like the hurricane, but in the Pacific.
Right.
But what do you think? I like volcano. What do you like for a second one?
let's do typhoon.
Okay. We're going to go volcano and typhoon.
Okay, it's the volcano and the typhoon versus?
Yeah, we said earthquake, which I think is kind of, I think you're 100% right, because I believe they had onesies and mullets. But we said tsunami, but I think after hearing typhoon, I think typhoon is right. We said tsunami and quake, earthquake.
Quake.
Each team will be receiving 5 points. The answers are earthquake and typhoon. Hmm. Typhoon, also known as tugboat. And yeah, these were a couple big dudes.
They had mullets, right?
They did. Well, typhoon, a mullet, earthquake, more of just like that Hulk Hogan bald on top, but still had the long hair in the back.
That's a great look.
I don't know if you still call that a mullet. Question 9. Tag Team Wrestling Part 2. Though tag team championships are usually held by teams of two, a fabulous threesome from the 1980s helped give rise to a rule that allowed any two members of a three-person team to defend the titles on any given night. This rule also shares a name with a song request that you might shout out at a concert, regardless of the band that's performing. What is the name of this rule?
Reluctant.
Okay. I don't think it's encore, but you might. I do know a lot of people, especially when I was in high school, used to troll by screaming "Free Bird."
That's what I wrote down. That's the only thing I can think of. That's the first thing I thought of.
Okay. I'm good to go. Let's go Free Bird.
Yeah, we also said Free Bird, though we'd like to know why, if you know that is the name of the rule.
Named after the fabulous Freebirds, a great threesome from the 1980s. The answer is indeed Freebird. Points to both teams. Recently employed by teams like the New Day.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say New Day, yeah.
And finally, question 10. Category is WrestleMania. For years, WrestleMania 3 was the highest attended WrestleMania of all time, when over 93,000 fans witnessed Hulk Hogan body slam Andre the Giant at the Pontiac Silverdome in Detroit. That record was broken 29 years later, when 101,000 plus fans nearly blew the roof off the stadium at WrestleMania 32 in what American city?
Well, what I'm thinking is, I think Minneapolis's roof collapsed under snow. Where the Vikings play before they built their new stadium.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense. He is our host from Bill Minnesota. Is
from Minnesota. Blew the roof off. Unless I'm trying to think of like maybe a wind. Is there a city named after wind or
Chicago?
Yeah, yeah, I was thinking that too. Chicago means smelly onion or something, right?
Stinky onion.
Yeah. That's my best guess. Minneapolis.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be someplace with a big covered.
Yeah.
Lock in Minneapolis.
Yeah, so Asha's wearing a Disneyland sweater today that you can't see. And I believe the place, I remember watching this pay-per-view, it's a place that I think kind of fudges their numbers sometimes because there's a lot of standing room only at this stadium. And I'm not sure if you need the exact city it's in, but. I believe it's called like Football Disneyland. So we said Dallas, the home of the Cowboys, which I think is Fort Worth.
Points to one team. The answer is Dallas. Actually, technically Arlington.
Or Arlington, right.
But I said I would take either. I was actually at this WrestleMania. And yeah, it was when Stone Cold Steve Austin's music hit, when that glass broke to be amongst the 101,000 plus that came unglued. Was a pretty cool thing. But yeah, the blew the roof off was just trying to direct you to an indoor stadium. Most of the biggest stadiums in the country that have a really high capacity are outdoor stadiums. Not many indoor stadiums that can hold that many people, but Jerry World down in Dallas, not sure if it was 101, but man, there was a lot of people there. That's a pretty big establishment.
That was a fun one too. Yeah. Great clues.
Ugh. All right. About that.
And with a couple extra questions answered correctly by 10 to midnight, we are taking the lead at 170 and leaving you guys behind, dropping the ball at 160. So still anybody's game going into the final. Can we please have those final round categories?
So final round will be famous bills. The five categories I have under famous bills are Bill Clinton, Bill Nye, the Buffalo Bills, the Bill of Rights, and Mr. Bill.
Our wagers are now locked in, so let's have the questions.
Sticking with my write what you know approach, famous bills. Question one, Bill Clinton. At 46 years and 154 days, Bill Clinton was the third youngest president on the day of his inauguration. What two presidents were younger? Question two, Bill Nye. Before his career in television began, Bill Nye spent nearly a decade doing stand-up comedy, an endeavor which began in 1978 after Nye won a look-alike contest for what multi-talented comedian, who Comedy Central ranked as sixth on its 2004 list of the greatest stand-up comics of all time. Question three, the Buffalo Bills. As a franchise, the Buffalo Bills are probably most famous for losing four straight Super Bowls from 1991 to 1994. There are two teams, however, that have lost more total Super Bowls than the Bills. Name both of them. Question four, the Bill of Rights. Among other things, the Bill of Rights contains a set of amendments, collectively known as the Rights of the Accused, that offer guarantees and protections to persons charged with crimes. Which of these amendments guarantees the right to a speedy public trial by an impartial jury, as well as the right to an accused person to have the assistance of counsel for his defense? And question five, Mr. Bill. While SNL's Mr. Bill might have attributed much of his suffering to fellow claymation character Sluggo, everyone knows that the true perpetrator behind Mr. Bill's misfortune is a different character that goes by the name of Mr. What Human Body Part?
All right, we have our questions. Let's see if our wagers will pay off for us after this break.
Welcome to From Beneath the Hollywood Sign. If you love old movies, Hollywood history, or the golden age of filmmaking, you've come to the right place. This is the podcast that talks about amazing stories of Tinseltown from another era and fascinating conversations with writer-producer Steve Kubine and actress-writer Nan McNamara.
One particular argument, he ended up dislocating Ava's jaw. Ava, she was such a tough cookie. Rather than cry or scream or anything like that, she...
Or call the police.
She should have, exactly. What does she do? She takes an ashtray and she knocks him over the head and knocks him unconscious. That's how she fought back. She didn't know what to do, so she called Louis B. Mayer. I think I've killed Howard Hughes. What do I do?
Revisit a time when the pictures were still big and everyone was ready for their close-up. When you want Tyrone Power instead of Tom Hardy, Jennifer Jones instead of Jennifer Lawrence, or Robert Mitchum rather than Robert Pattinson, then From Beneath the Hollywood Sign is the gin joint for you.
You can spend less time staying in the know about all things gaming and get more time to actually play the games you love with the IGN Daily Update podcast. All you need is a few minutes to hear the latest from IGN on the world of video games, movies, and television with news, previews, and reviews. You'll hear everything from Comic-Con coverage to the huge Diablo 4 launch. So listen and subscribe to the IGN Daily Update wherever you get your podcasts. That's the IGN Daily Update, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, and we are back with our answers, and we'll see who's cream of the crop today.
Definitely Bill today with these questions. Thank you, Bill, for all the wonderful questions. We're excited to see how this is going to end up, so let's get those clues again. We'll give you our answers.
All right. Question one in the category or the round famous bills. Category was Bill Clinton. At 46 years and 154 days, Bill Clinton was the third youngest president on the day of his inauguration. What two presidents were younger?
So I believe you guys wagered 30s all the way down, correct?
Absolutely. We went all in.
All right. Ours were kind of all over the place. So for this first one, we wagered 20. We said JFK and Obama.
Okay, and we said JFK and Teddy Roosevelt, as you guys say, but Roosevelt, as I say.
Point points to one team. The answers are JFK and Teddy Roosevelt, who was actually the youngest, only 42 years old.
I always forget after about that.
William Kinley's assassination.
Yeah, because he took over. I think he was in his, like, I almost feel like he was in his 30s. And then when he got re-inaugurated, he was in his early teens. Yes.
He was a teenager. He was in the early teens. The Doogie Howser.
You just couldn't tell because he already had a mustache.
Born with it, in fact.
Question two category was Bill Nye. Before his career in television began, Bill Nye spent nearly a decade doing stand-up comedy, an endeavor which began in 1978 after Nye won a look-alike contest for what multi-talented comedian, who Comedy Central ranked as sixth on its 2004 list of the greatest stand-up comics of all time.
Just heard multi-talented, which makes me worried about our answer for this. We wagered 30, and we put Woody Allen.
We also wagered 30, and we put Steve Martin.
Points to one team. Multi-talented was the key word, and the answer is Steve Martin, the banjo-playing Steve Martin. I don't really see the resemblance all that much, but apparently in 1978, those guys must have looked pretty similar.
I don't know. All lanky white dudes look the
same.
That's
exactly what I was going to say. I was going to go with skinny white
Steve
guy,
Martin's
but sure.
Not that lanky though.
Before the 90s,
wild
I feel like
crazy guys.
Before the 90s, you could pretty much look like anyone you wanted because there's no internet, so you could just, you know, she had a good nose person.
Good hairstyle. Set.
Good hairstyle.
Politics.
Well, to your point, Ken, when I started looking up researching Bill Nye, my intention was to do some kind of a science question, but when I read that, I just said this has to be the question. This is too strange and funny.
So it's sabotage is what it is.
Yes, it's sabotage. Okay. Listen, all y'all. Question three, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Mees. As a franchise, the Buffalo Bills are probably most famous for losing four straight Super Bowls from 1991 to 1994. There are two teams, however, that have lost more total Super Bowls than the Bills. Name both of them.
For 15 points, we said the Patriots and
the Broncos.
We also said the Patriots and the Broncos.
No one took the Vikings bait. Points to both teams. The answers are the Patriots and the Broncos, both of whom have won multiple Super Bowls, but have also lost multiple Super Bowls, five to be exact.
It's a side effect of being good.
Bill, don't worry about it. We know that the Vikings like to blow it in the NFC Championship game.
I'm fairly confident the Vikings are kicking the Cardinals' butts right now. I can't wait to get out there and check it out once we wrap up. All right, question four, category was the Bill of Rights. Among other things, the Bill of Rights contains a set of amendments collectively known as the Rights of the Accused that offer guarantees and protections to persons charged with crimes. Which of these amendments guarantees the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury, as well as the right of an accused person to have the assistance of counsel for his defense?
We wagered zero on this one. We were thinking of a police officer like reading the rights to an arrestee, and we felt like that part comes right before you have the right to remain silent. We couldn't quite remember if it was before or after. Regardless, we wagered zero. We said the fourth.
We wagered 30, and we said the sixth.
Points to one team. The answer is numero seis, which is Spanish for number six, is the Sixth Amendment.
Asha had that cold.
Yeah, no hesitation from Asha on that one. And lastly, question five, category is Mr. Bill. While SNL's Mr. Bill might have attributed much of his suffering to a fellow claymation character, Sluggo, everyone knows that the true perpetrator behind Mr. Bill's misfortune is a different character that goes by the name of Mr. What? Human body part.
We wagered 10 on this one. We said Mr. Hand.
We also said Mr. Hand, and we wagered 30.
Points to both teams. The answer is Mr. Hands, and I will accept the singular version of that answer as well. So yeah, Mr. Hands.
Well, Neil, well, there's nothing we could do about that.
No, the crowd was on their side. They got into a run on us, and no holding back. We got pummeled.
Yep. 10 to midnight, 1:45 to finish the game. The team that did not drop the ball with 3:10, dropping the ball. You're the cream of the crop.
The cream of the crop.
Yay.
Asha, well done.
Well done, Jeff.
Excellent.
Hey,
excellent
I could
partnership.
Use a wrestling reference and say we laid the smack down on them.
Nice.
There you go.
Well done.
Bill, great questions today. We had a great time. Any parting thoughts from you?
Yeah, just want to give a shout out to my trivia team, which includes executive producer Dave Brown. We are the Cool Dudes, 69420. Kind of going with like an AOL, 1990s screen name there. And for anyone interested in professional wrestling, the Revolutionary Bill Williams. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook. So if you want to see me come wrestle in a town near you, give me a follow and tell your local wrestling promotion to give me a booking.
Yes, and once again, thank you for the shout-outs to all those great teachers that you mentioned. And Asha, great work today. You defeated us single-handedly, I'm going to say. Jeff, what do you think?
I'll go with it.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Any final shout-outs?
We blamed it on Sluggo, but we know.
We know who is responsible, yeah. Any final shout-outs today?
No, thanks for having me on. Congratulations on 300 episodes, although we know it's 300-plus, definitely. With everything else you guys do, since it'll be December, happy holidays and happy new year, and hoping 2023 is great for everybody.
Yeah, thank you, Asha. And just a reminder, as always, we are part of the Airwave Media Network, a great network where you can find other podcasts such as The Ancient World, Art of History, and A Mindful Moment. A Mindful Moment. And that'll do it for today's episode. We once again want to thank our guests, Bill and Asha, and for Jeff, Neil, Matt, somewhere in the world, and myself, Ken, that was Triviality.